It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. And just the fact that there is not snow on the ground, Bob, you've got to be smiling, right?
Smiling from ear to ear. We had phenomenal weather up here in my neck of the woods, which is the suburbs of Chicago, for anybody who doesn't know. And that was about 4, 5, and 6 weeks ago. And then we had this huge dip. Again, little reminder that maybe spring isn't ready to spring quite yet, about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. But now things are starting to hopefully, but I do live in the Chicago area, so things can change quickly, but hopefully start to change for the better. So it feels that way. It feels like winter might be done.
Bob, years ago, and you and I have kind of lamented this, you know, things just change, and it's okay that things don't always stay the same, but at one time, we would trade commodities on the floor of either the CBOT or CME, and you traders would actually have to get into the city to go to work. And so weather conditions could actually affect their mood, if you will. Not that it affected the price any, but now that we're electronic, has that really gone away at this point?
I believe it has. I think you're right about it kind of setting the stage in terms of the mood of the moment, in terms of the weather and the grind to get downtown. Now, some of us were fortunate enough where there's a big train line called the Metro that runs from the Northwest suburbs and heads right into the loop. And it pretty much terminates at this thing called the Ogilvie Street train station, which is right next to the Chicago River. And then right across the street from the river, so just one bridge you had to cross, was the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. So it wasn't that bad getting there if that's all you had to traverse. But that was the CME group, or the CME. The Chicago Board of Trade was a bit farther, maybe 7 blocks farther into the loop. And it's called the loop because there's a big loop of the subway, the L, that loops around, right? So for anybody who doesn't know that about Chicago. Anyway, on the southern part of the loop, that's where the Chicago Board of Trade was. So I guess you could kind of argue that the guys with the shorter distance, me, who was working at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, might have had a subtly better attitude than the guys who had to walk those 7 blocks in the bitter cold weather. But, you know, I do think it has, I think psychology has a big part to do with anybody trading anywhere. So in as much as kind of segueing on your question there, I definitely feel like those things can definitely have an impact in the marketplace, at least in the short term. Over the long term, it's more the fundamentals and the technicals, but psychology does definitely have a place in it.
Well, let's start with where you made your home there for a while at the CME, and that's where we trade livestock futures. Live cattle, triple-digit gains on Monday. We saw it spill over into the feeders. Or vice versa, actually. I guess the feeders had really had the big day. Even hogs, kind of mixed trade there. What are we trading right now? What's the news?
We're trying to get a handle on, you know, where the cash market should be for this live cattle market. We've seen a bit of both things happening this year so far. And I wish I should say this year, I mean, really about year to date. So September is last year, we had that massive dip from September into December, and then we saw a pretty decent rally from December into a few months ago, March, February, March timeframe, a bounce back up to 184. So that bounce to the upside gave back in price about half of what we had lost between that September and December timeframe. And I'm looking at the live cattle futures when I'm talking about this, but something similar happened with the feeder cattle with a big break from September to December in feeder cattle. And then again, a pretty good rally gaining back half of that loss. All right, into the first quarter of this year. So the markets had pretty good swings based on really what's expectations for availability on the supply side, demand side, right? Just your old-fashioned supply and demand scenario and what people are thinking going forward. I don't know where it's going to go over the short term. It kind of feels to me that this break that we've seen over the last few weeks might be petering out a bit. It's not just because the market is up today. I don't think one day can make a big difference if the overall trend has got solid reasons to continue. But nonetheless, I just think that there is the fact that in terms of the quantity expected, you know, the actual amount of cattle had available for this year in 2024 for the remaining, you know, better part of three quarters is going to decrease relative to years past. So there's that lack of availability readily out there. The big question, I guess, will be whether or not, you know, the demand is going to be sustained. And really, one of the factors pretty much in most of the markets I look at is just math, right? Whether the guys who are either producing a commodity or have to procure a commodity for processing it are making money. And those are the things I think that really start playing into the marketplace. The bigger picture is that there's less head out there. The week to week and month to month is, are people making money and can they sustain those losses for a little bit because they can't sustain them forever or they go out of business. And I guess I'm referring to the Packers. You know, there's points in time where they do live in the red, shall we say, but they can't stay in the red. So things need to adjust in terms of prices out there. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing happening over the last 5 or 6 months is some of those adjustments into expectations. Lately, the cash has been a little bit on the weaker side. So last week, five-day weighted average price was down a couple bucks week on week. The Southern live cattle traded mostly about $2 lower based on a weighted average, down to about 182. The northern dress cattle traded somewhere between 293 and 295, which is anywhere from $2 to $4 lower week on week based on a weighted average. Ox beef prices closed higher, so that's a good thing in terms of the Packers' demand and appetite. The choice was up 220. The select was up just 39 cents, but still was up. So cash lower, box beef prices higher. All right, so that's kind of a good recipe for the Packers to continue to want to be in the marketplace, you know, as aggressively as they can be with those two setting up that way. Some of the external factors, like the managed money, which is very important because when you think about the quantity of contracts they can control at any one particular time and what that is relative to the overall volume and open interest for a particular commodity can be substantial. So that's one of the reasons that we watch the Commitment of Traders report really closely to see what the managed money is doing. And of lately, the latest report that came out showed that the managed money category of traders was net sellers of about 16.3 thousand contracts. That was through April 9th. So that reduced their net long from, I guess it would have been about 52 or 53,000 contracts down to about 37,000 contracts. And that was the fourth straight week of selling. So, you know, they're hitting the exits thinking that things are a little bit overpriced. And once they hit the exits, they tend to do so in unison. Not always, but they tend to do it so in unison when you see it. They're all looking at the same fundamentals. It tends to put some pressure in the prices. So I think maybe what I'm saying is, hopefully the worst of that short-term selling and kind of lightening up of their positions is over, and that might be another reason why the market's able to kind of like build a bit of a base here and maybe turn around. So we'll keep an eye on the cash market, see where it wants to start trading this week. Cash is called, I believe, steady to start out this week. We'll see if that comes into play. Obviously, we need to keep an eye on the grain markets, too, because they can have an influence in the cattle market. So that'll be something we get an eye on also.
Okay, so you mentioned the grain markets. We only have a couple of minutes left here, but we did see a sell-off on Monday. Is that a sign of things to come?
Maybe. You know, this market's had a hard time sustaining any kind of gains in the first place. When you look at the overall trend for corn, wheat, and soybeans, in my opinion, if you just look at the charts, it pretty much tells you that there seems to be an ample amount out there relative to what the world needs at the moment. So markets been in a long cycle of repricing things to the downside, trying to adjust for that bit of oversupply, shall we say. We did get a bit of fundamental data today from the NOPA report, basically showing that the soybean crush for March came out a little bit less than the average guesstimate going into the report and more towards the bottom end of the range of estimates. So in terms of just the crush expectations, that was lower than expected. And obviously that's a demand base on the crush side. Oil stocks were also higher than expected. So you got less crush and you've got higher supply out there. So that tends to be a bit bearish, which might be one of the reasons why we saw the bean oil and the soybeans push a little bit lower today. The biggest variable I think that the market's trying to grapple with right now in terms of pricing is the differential between what the USDA is seeing as production estimates down in South America and what those in South America are seeing as estimates for their production. For example, USDA has Brazilian soybean crop at 155 million metric tons. The Brazilian government's got it closer to 146.5. So that's, what, eight and a half to nine million metric tons differential. A differential is not abnormal, but normally it's like 1 to 4 million metric tons, not as close to eight. So there's a big gap there between two different opinions on the quantity that's coming out of South America. If you look at Buenos Aires Grains Exchange, their soybean crop is being put at about 51. The USDA is at 50, so a bit tighter there, okay? So that's not as bad as the soybean situation down in Brazil. The corn crop that the USDA has for Brazil is 124 million metric tons. The government down in Brazil has 111, so that's a 13 million metric ton differential. So you can see, what is the market doing right now? Is the market kind of pricing in what the government down there is seeing as the probability in terms of production, or is the market pricing in what the U.S. is seeing as the probable production down in South America? And we'll have to see which one, you know, which way those numbers kind of push towards each other to get a better feel of where prices should be. So I think that's one of the biggest variables that the market's trying to figure out right now. So we'll see how it plays out.
Okay. We want to talk one-on-one. How do we do it?
Toll free. How about old fashioned 312-987-2053 phone number, or you can reach out by email at bmauer@manducatrading.com, or come visit the website at www.myfuturesadvisor.com.
Bob Mauer, Manduca Trading, Chicago, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at deltapine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.